deeper down the rabbit hole. Saturday, 6 p.m., live in Toronto, Ontario, at the Queen City Curio, a cult and spiritual store. Well, Zach, you know, yesterday we were supposed to have a show to you, but that didn't happen, right? Because 6 feet of snow killed all internet.
It's the way of Toronto.
Not for us.
I say.
No, it wasn't us. That was out in Colorado. So Andy Blackwood, we're going to have him on Monday to make up that show. So if you were watching yesterday and you're like, there's no show, you guys lied, blame it on the blizzard, because it totally was the blizzard's fault.
Yes, and we will get that vampirism show this upcoming Monday, so fun times.
Yeah. Though it's something that's a little spookier if it's like late at midnight and we're doing a vampirism show.
Yes, it is. With the ambiance, you know, the backdrop.
Where are we at, Zach? Where are we broadcasting live from?
Where are we broadcasting from? We're from 607 Girard Street East in Toronto, Ontario, suite 401 and 2. We have most of the floor. We're taking over.
Correct. We are taking over, at least Toronto. So that said, today, who is our fine guest? The mystery guest, which is not so mystery because they're on the video already.
There we go. Well, our fine mystery guest is Allison Chutosky. She's a scholar and practitioner of variety forms, optometry, and focused results-based magic. She's especially interested in Solomonic magic and Greco-Egyptian magic. Specifically, we're talking to her about the PGM. And she's also well-versed in soul flight and psychic magics of various kinds. So welcome to the show, Allison.
I actually think specifically we're talking about the Helios Rite. It's not just the whole PGM. It's the Helios Rite. The PGM's like 500 pages.
It's huge. 1 hour. That's what you guys get on Deeper Down Queen's Eight. We could summarize that in 1 hour.
Quick, Allison, summarize the entire PGM in 5 minutes.
I would like to hear that.
I'd like to hear that too. I think that'd be great video graphic infos type of thing. I'd be like, shit, yes, 5 minutes.
I mean, and it's a series of thousands and thousands of rituals. So a 5-minute summary would be the most awesome summary I've ever, either the most incomplete awesome summary I've ever seen or just completely awesome.
Also, a lot of people associate the PGM with the book that's collected them by Hans-Dieter Betz, but there's actually a whole lot of museum texts, some of which were translated to put into that book, but because it's magic from Egypt during the imperial era, from when it was a colony of first Greece and then Rome, we could actually find more PGM spells. Like there could be more.
So it's right. One of the things is that the PGM is having its day, sort of, as in it's become real popular recently. What convinced you to kind of write a book? Besides that, what convinced you to write a book on just the Helios Rite?
So, two things. Number one, people have been asking me to write about the PGM for years. And originally I was like, I'm going to work on a book, but books are very long and I wanted it to be very comprehensive. So in the meantime, I figured why not just put out a little monograph about a single spell? And it's a spell that I feel very accessible to people. It doesn't require any weird materia. It doesn't require any materia. In fact, it just says, address this to the sun as the instructions. So it's a quick little spell. It's good for a whole lot of different things. It can even be done as a daily self-targeted empowerment. So I really wanted to get that out there for folks who are saying, you know, I hear a lot about the PGM, but I don't know where to start. I opened it up. It's like sacrifice a falcon. It's going to drop, you know, what's going on here? I don't even know. So
that's probably not the worst thing in there, honestly.
Yeah.
Sacrifice the falcon.
There is a lot of animal sacrifice in the PGM. because it is ancient magic, and that was just a part of their practice at the time. In fact, we've got archaeological evidence suggesting that they had temples where they bred sacrificial animals, right? So that was like a business, you know, just go down to the temple, get yourself a falcon, call it a day.
As an initiated voodoo priest, you're not going to see me flinch too much about that.
Yep.
So maybe other people will flinch, but yeah, it is kind of a traditional Egyptian, Greek, and Judaic method of magic, and obviously African. So not quite our sensibilities, but if we come to the point soon where we have to grow our own livestock, might be again. So what got you started into that? Like, you wanted a ritual that was pretty accessible, which the Helios rite is pretty accessible, but what got you started into maybe all of the occultism and then made you start deciding to sell, you know, talismans and talismanic objects?
So there's a lot of answers to this because I've gotten into different forms of magic and the occult as I've gotten older, right? So there's, you know, how I got into grimoire magic, there's how I got into the PGM, there's how I got into energy work, there's the whole, I was always just kind of spooky, and I knew that there was other stuff out there, so that was always something that I was trying to pursue. However, the way that I got into the PGM was that I heard that there was a ritual to contact your holy guardian angel in the PGM, and that, you know, there was a spell that had been based off of it, and that was Liber Samech. And it was on my list of things to do for that year. I wanted to explore the Holy Guardian Angel thing. So I decided to pick up a copy of the PGM, which in English is the Greek Magical Papyri. And you'll hear us call that PGM a lot. That's the abbreviation, Papyri Greke Magicae. So I picked it up, and, you know, looking at this text, it is very different than what I was expecting. You know, there's almost 2,000 years between some of the spells and now, so it's a different culture, it's a very different time period, and some of it was just mysterious and didn't really make sense. So the idea that there was mystery to decipher and that would lead to more powerful magic, I was hooked. So I've just been studying the PGM for years, practicing out of it. And several of the items that I make professionally are enchanted with PGM spells. Now, how I got to do this professionally is that, you know, I was in corporate America. I thought that I would ride out the whole rest of my career in corporate America, and I got hit by a wave of layoffs. They laid off the whole team I was on. So I had already been making enchanted items for a while at that point and giving them to friends, right? Because they're useful. And I wanted to help my friends get ahead. So I'm there. I'm recently unemployed. I'm sending out resumes, cringing every time I send one, like, ugh. What if I have to like put on a suit and get on a train and go to another city and sit in an office for 8 to 9 hours? And I didn't want to do it. I just didn't want to. But, you know, I was still trying to get a job that way. And as I was sending these resumes out, folks started asking, hey, do you make these for sale? These enchanted items. And at the time I was best known for Solomonic Pentacles, even though I've been making phylacteries, which are protective items from the PGM, for much longer than I've been making Solomonic Pentacles. And then I realized, like, wow, maybe this is a viable career for me.
Nice.
It turns out it was.
There super nice.
So I've you know, just to amend that, I've been with Practical Occult. This has been my professional day job, the entire run of Practical Occult. I know a lot of people out there thought that it must be my side job or something like that. It's not.
Insider scoop, everyone. There you go.
So with the Helios rite, you initially picked that one. You know, what was your first experience when you did the rite? Maybe you compare that to where it is now and how it, the rituals change as you kind of practice it more.
So I think, I can't remember if this was the absolute first time I did it, but the first time I remember the results from it, I was actually doing a spell on behalf of someone else. So I had before that a very long run with planetary magic in a Solomonic context. So I was used to tackling things that way, right? So if someone would say, oh, I have job issues, you know, I might go with Jupiter. Someone has love issues, I might go with Venus. But then I had a situation where I had a friend that had just all sorts of issues going on in their life at once that would normally require multiple planetary influences to resolve. So I thought, you know, why don't I try this PGM spell and I'm going to target them with it. So I self-identified as them. And within 24 hours, all of the issues had just resolved themselves. I mean, they were being sued. They were having relationship troubles. Like, there's just a lot of stuff going on. And that all resolved itself. Though in this case, I also added some verbal caveats, which is that I did it as the sun was going down. And I said, let the sun set on all of this person's problems. And as the sun rises, let them rise in power. And that's what happened. So huge results.
Now with the Helios specifically, those are big results. Those are incredible results. Having practiced other PGM pieces, have you found other rituals have a similar effect, or are they more specific and targeted? Because that was a very more blanket statement on what you're talking about there.
I mean, I've gotten some really amazing results from some really simple spells in the PGM. There's one spell in there. There's actually a couple that say that they are to restrain anger. And I did one of those spells on behalf of a friend who was in a domestic violence situation, targeting my friend. And now this is, as in many domestic situations, this is something that had been going on for like a period of time where the cops had been called many occasions and like really nothing was being done through official channels, which is sadly often the case. So when I did this spell, you know, I was restraining the anger of the attacker towards the victim. And I honestly, I didn't know how it was going to turn out. You know, it was a test. And within 3 days, the offender was arrested. And they were in jail for so long that the person I was trying to help was able to just move on with their life.
So what is you've been doing magic for a while. What about the PGM structure kind of seems different than your ceremonial magic and the planetary magic or the other forms of pentacle magic that you are doing? Like, why does it seem to work better, you know, when you connect to it?
So I think there's actually a lot of similarity between the two, but the magic of the PGM is what I would consider to be Heka, which is an Egyptian word. And the way that the Egyptians envisioned Heka was that this was the force that brought order out of chaos, right? This is the force that created the universe and daily renews it. So we're working with, you know, huge tier power there. And the idea is that can be harnessed to bring into your own life. And actually that's what's going on in the spell to Helios, because if you read the spell, which is not only available in this booklet, but also on my site, Practical Occult, I've got a little resource section set up. So it's got the translation of the spell, music to go with the spell, some pronunciation guides, things like that. But if you read the spell, you'll realize that it's a narrative charm. It's got a narrative charm part to it, where it's telling the story of how the sun caused the earth to flourish. You know, it's talking about how, you know, the sun god laughs and, you know, things are growing and animals are reproducing, and it's just bringing all of this vitality. And then it's taking that and saying, okay, now give it to me.
So how do you connect to the narrative structure? Because you mentioned that you're doing some energy work. How do you connect to that greater narrative, like to really connect and enliven it, to bring it into being when you're doing the rituals with the PGA?
I mean, so for me, it can just be as simple as either being in the actual sun, like just getting in sunlight and feeling it on me. Or, you know, now that I've done it so many times, I can just reach out and feel it. So this spell is equally good 24 hours. The sun doesn't have to be up to do it. You can do it at night. Still works. Additionally, this spell was originally intended to enchant an item. So me using it to enchant myself is a little bit of an innovation, but, you know, not really too innovative there.
Well, you mentioned using your breath with it. So this is where, is there a particular ways you're going about that? Like you're saying feeling the sun on your skin. Are you connecting that to breath work as you would do probably say in Eastern practices, or how are you going about that?
I don't really have any Eastern breath work practices. So when I'm enchanting an object, I will either breathe on the object or I will fumigate it with incense, or both.
So if people want to get into PGM work, how do you recommend they start? Obviously, with the healer church, you said it's just generally accessible. But how would you tell them to approach this and go into the first time of doing the Helios route? What should they get ready? What should they do? Should they come to it?
So this particular rite does not require any materia. So it's okay if you don't have a closet full of falcons to draw on or, you know, things like that. I personally tend to add flame and incense to mine, you know, just because I like that. However, I know that that's a problem for some people who are trying to practice on the down low or might be living in a place that's not amenable to that. So you can just omit it. And, you know, if you do need that extra something, I would say try to stand in the sunlight while doing it. But that's also not required.
So just stand in the sun, you know, anything like the mental preparation for them to kind of get ready, or do you have any mental preparation that you do when you're going into this? Is it coming from the years' experience? Like you kind of automatically do it nowadays?
Yeah, I am about, you know, seconds away from that trance state that, you know, one tries to gain from magic just at any given time, right? Because as a professional, I just do magic all the time, you know, sometimes multiple times a day. So it's something that I've built up a lot of years of practice with, but I don't know that that's required for this magic. I have posted some things in the PGM study and practice group on Facebook, which is an excellent resource for folks that are trying to learn and talk about the PGM. Got a lot of practitioners in there. We've got academics who've published. We even have one of the translators of the PGM in there, though he doesn't say much, but always delighted to see his comments. So I'd maybe like a year or two ago opened it up as an experiment where I asked people to try the spell self-targeted and see what results they're getting. And, you know, the results were just overwhelmingly positive. So many people tested it.
And were those people who had any experience doing magic previously to that, or were they complete noobs? Like if they've already heard that the PGM produces results, that's biasing the experiment, actually.
Is it though? Because scientifically,
biases the experiment if you have a hypnotic suggestion or a suggestion that this ritual gets strong results. Like that is the expectation because you're an authority figure. That's a psychological fact. Like that's not to say that it doesn't get results, but they're already primed to get, they're primed to expect results, right? That would kind of not make it double blind if they're coming in understanding the PGM gets strong results. It would indicate you're getting the expectation that it gets strong results and then they do the ritual and that's an excuse to get strong results. as opposed to like a double blind study where people haven't really heard of the PGM and you hand them the ritual and say, go do it, so and seeing what the results are.
I think that brings up a question. Now, I would say that in a lot of cases, there's really no way to run like a scientific test of magic for reasons that all of the variables in magic can't be reproduced. So for example, timing might be an issue in magic, right? A lot of people believe that astrological timing or time of day, it plays a factor, right? So any two times you do the spell, they're going to be at different times. So that's already one variable that you'll never be able to reproduce. So I don't know that there's ever going to be something that we can do that is going to satisfy, you know, scientists as far as this goes. But, you know, it might have been synchronicity that the morning after I did this spell, you know, this person had their lawsuit dropped and all of this other stuff happened.
No, I definitely won't argue with the results you got. You're an experienced magician. That's what I'm saying. You could pick up almost any system and get results after years of ceremonial training. That isn't arguable. That's a fact for most ceremonial magicians if they actually did the work. And especially the structure of the PGM is such that it does mirror a lot of the invocations in ceremonial magic, or feels like that. So it's very familiar ground. So I have no doubt that that's exactly the results you got. Where I was saying I had more questions about was the study of just on YouTube or on Facebook, where people come to a group and they get results that doesn't tell me what their background is before they actually did the spell, right? It doesn't say that the PGM itself gets results instantly by itself. Like, I would never make that claim. Now, that might have been what happened, but there's a missing piece here of what is their background? Like, how much magic have they done before that? How much do they know about the PGM? They're obviously in PGM study group for a reason. Like, there's all these questions that come up when that claim is made that there's that by itself the PGM works. Well, okay, now I want to know more. Like, what are these people? Who are these people? Like, what is their background? Not to say that it doesn't work, because I'm actually sure it does. But when an experienced magician picks up a system, they're going to be able to make it work almost right away, especially if they like it. You know, I mean, if it's a system they don't like, they might have issues. Or experience witch. I don't know if you prefer to be called magician or witch.
Answer to both.
But either way, you could pick up another system, and if it's not abhorrent to you, you probably could get it to work because you have X number of years experience in the, we won't go into how many, right? Because we know it's probably a lot. And that means that by virtue of that, like, yeah, it's going to work. And I have no doubt Helios is, as a Greek entity, is so close to the solar magic in ceremonial magic that I could totally see the transition working instantly, because you have a frame of reference to the god, to the god form and what it actually represents, even the Heka. Like, you have an internal frame of reference to everything already, because it's close enough that it makes sense that you could instantly make the jump to everything. But I guess I was asking about, like, because when it's sort of like someone comes on the PGM group and to get results, I want to know what their background is. Like, what is going on with them? Because I need to, you know, did the PGM get results, or are they a good magician?
Right. So
both can be true at the same time, right? They could be a good magician and the PGM gets results, but separating them out is a little tougher.
Sure. And there's always going to be a mixed bag when you are in a large group like that and you, you know, do an experiment. So I would imagine that, you know, some folks were experienced practitioners and other folks less so.
And right. And plus that, are the people who say they got something the only people who respond, right? The negative response is people don't admit they did something that didn't work, right? They did it, but then it didn't do anything, so they don't say anything, because social media is performative.
I mean, that's also a possibility too.
That's not to say, like I'm saying, that I don't think PGM works. I know the PGM spells work. It's just kind of like, where is the locus coming from? Like, is it just because people are good practitioners, or they got a synchronicity? Like, and that's an important question, right? Like my experience with the PGM is that some of these spells take a little bit of time to acclimate to if you don't have a frame of reference.
So I will say that I've been recommending this spell for a couple years now. And I've recommended it to people who have a lot of hardship in their life, right? So whatever other magic they can do, it wasn't sufficient to lift them up. But then when they started doing this spell as a daily practice, they found their life getting better and better in a lot of different ways. Right. Objective, you know, getting more money at work, or, you know, someone who is having car trouble had someone offer to carpool with them so they didn't have to take their car.
And with us all, like I said, I totally believe that the Helios ritual will work, but like, they had a contents for the sun, right? Or they've done other magic.
I feel like everyone on Earth probably has a context for the sun.
That one is probably true, yeah. But not necessarily in this context, because you're calling the 12 benevolent hours of the sun, you know, everyone has a context for the sun, like you go outside, but not the graces of the sun, especially not what's in the Helios ritual, like the benefacts of the sun. Like, but if they're used to doing some magic, they may have some notion of that. Like, the sun is this this source of glorious goodness in the world, as it were. Except if you're in the desert, then people might have a different context of the sun.
Yeah, that's a little rough on the desert sun's like.
Really, all I can say is just to encourage people to check out my resource site on practicalocult.com, where they can get a translation of the spell that's just right there, and they can try it for themselves and see how that works, and hopefully post about it on social media so it can get back to me.
Or they could email you directly, you know, and tell you this totally worked. Now that said, is there any other spells from the PGM that you like that maybe you didn't write a book yet, but you still love them?
Sure. I would say that my previous favorite spell before this was the Steely of Jew, which is, you know, the headless rite that everyone's not everyone's familiar with, but it's definitely probably it's one of the most well-known spells out of the PGM. And I actually had been using the formula that starts it off, where you know, it says subject me all diamonds, you know, and I was using that to command the spirits of inanimate objects to work. So I've done really useful things like commanding my dead battery to start in my car. One of my friends also used it to start their car when they found themselves with a dead battery in a parking lot. You know, I used it to unjam this. I use a dental drill sometimes when I engrave, and I'd been carving a lodestone with it, right? So I had all this magnetic dust that had like jammed up the insides to the point where I couldn't even disassemble it to like air it out. And I was like, oh no, am I gonna have to like contact customer support about this and ship it back? Like, what am I gonna do if I can't get this to work? And finally, in desperation, I just like commanded the spirit of this thing to work. And then I was able to get it. To take it apart and, you know, air it out and get it to work again. And so I've used it a whole bunch of times on appliances that weren't working and things like that. And this was also another experiment in the PGM study group where I opened it up and said, hey, I'm doing this. Just, you know, does this work for other people? And people were responding positively. Though it doesn't have 100% success rate, right? Like, it tends to work better for things that are like software or electrical issues or things like that. Whereas
that's actually because that are easier to glitch.
Yeah. So for example, like, you know, let's say you dropped your phone in the water and now it's like rusted or, you know, or whatever, like you're probably not going to fix that. But I've had people say, you know, they had like a smartwatch or a smartphone or thing like that. And it was glitching to the point where it wouldn't turn on even when charged. And that's the sort of thing that this is good for.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a glitch, software glitch that you can control. And you just get it to switch some zeros and ones and you're good to go. Whereas probably if you had a larger mechanical failure, then yeah, it gets a little rougher. Car drops a transmission, it's probably not
good. A little tougher on that one.
But a battery, you might be able to eke out just enough to get it to turn over.
Right. And I still had to replace my battery, like, shortly thereafter. But
I got it. It was just enough to get to the car dealership.
And then when it died so hard that it wiped out all of my radio information. It was dead.
Right, you got enough to just make the chemical soup in the battery, turn it over and get to the, you know, the car parts store.
And I have an animistic worldview, right? So I really believe that I'm talking to the spirit of the object and that it's trying really hard for me.
Right. And then it died. So it tried really hard, but then the battery died. But it was dying anyway, but it sort of gave it.
It went the extra mile. Went the extra mile on that.
Right. I'm over here like, please. Just a little more.
Do a heroic deed before you die, oh great battery. I'm not making fun of
that. Become a legend. Become a legend.
Actually, the battery is a legend because we're talking about it.
I know, because we're talking about it.
It's going to be immortal, provided that, well, immortal up until the internet ends. Since video doesn't have any physical stones to record it or paper, so. But you should thank the battery by writing it down in the story, putting it in a safe so that it's immortal.
I have sadly already replaced that battery. I did not keep it. So, which is a shame.
The story is told.
You're right. Maybe 200 years from now, if I had kept it, it would be in a museum. Leaking corrosion all over the place. Well,
in a way, we're linking this back to the narrative structure of the PGM magic. Like, we're talking about the magic of this battery that gave its last heroic kind of sense because it got touched by divine forces. And then at that point, it made a heroic effort to get you to where you need to go. And it's loosely interpreting, but it is sort of putting it into a context of inspiring people who might be listening to the types of magic that is possible or touching the original source of the headless ritual through the story.
Right. And I'm really all about practical magic. Like, I want things that make my life and the lives of other people objectively better. And, you know, being able to get my car to start when I'm stranded, that made my life objectively better.
So did you have other uses for the headless ritual too? Like, I know what it's usually sometimes considered a partial substitute for communication with your own soul, and it's not quite the Abramelin ritual, but.
So I would say that I do not believe that spell puts one in touch with their holy guardian angel. But I say that with a grain of salt because I haven't done the Abramelin ritual. So I don't, you know, it's like when you're talking about something that you don't have context for, you know, there's always a little bit of guesswork involved. Though yeah. I do believe that spell connects you with powerful spirits. I just don't believe that any of them were my holy guardian angel.
So what do you think those spirits are then? Just spirits around you or spirits of the universe or?
Yes, both. I have noticed that when I do it, the spirits around me kind of join in. So sometimes it seems almost like a little chorus of spirits doing it, which is really fascinating. And I've heard other people report that as well. But yeah, I do believe that it connects you to larger, more universal spirits. And I hope to write about that in a future monograph.
Oh, so it's come. You heard it here, probably not here first, but that you're going to write about that particular ritual, and that's pretty cool.
It's not quite, but I will definitely try to write about that.
So not quite the Holy Garden Angel, but something universal, or beyond the earthly plane, and sort of.
You know, that's also debatable, right? Because I believe that definitely some of the magic in the PGM is sublunar, right? So it's not necessarily, you know, like I'm calling on, you know, the energies of the planet Mars or things like that. Everything seems a little more closer and also in some cases, chthonic or subterranean.
Mm. That is definitely true. There's a lot of parts of the PGM that deal with entropic forces or definitely the forces out of Tartarus. More difficult or the more scary, what is generally considered scarier. They're not scarier, but for many people, they consider them scarier or aggressive or primordial. Or they touch on death, which scares people the most usually.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of necromancy in the PGM. I mean, they use it for just a lot of things that, you know, I probably wouldn't use it for, right? Like there's a lot of amatory coercion, you know, like they're labeled as love spells, but really they're kind of like necromantic curses to target, you know, the person that you want and have them become restless and have nightmares and be unsettled until they run to you. So, you know, and that's, you know, I'm sure people hearing that would be like, oh my gosh, that's terrible. But that was the reality of this situation 2000 years ago.
Yeah, but I mean, some people might think that's horrible, but isn't that what a lot of people actually pay for when they're asking for love spells? I mean, there's probably a whole group of people that actually are okay with that. And that kind of spell, like I've seen that kind of spell in Celtic myths too. Like this certainly in the Conjure, which I know more about, there's a lot of spells that look exactly like that. Like, you know, so this is like every culture except a modern sensibility.
Yeah,
I think this is okay. And a lot of people are doing spells like that, even in modern thing. They just don't talk about the spells that do that sort of thing. Or they won't admit they're doing that sort of spell. I mean, I take that. I'm with you on the general scorn you have. It was under your voice. I could hear it. I heard it right there. Like, why would you do that if you actually cared about someone? Like, that's, I heard it. You could have said it. Like, we saw it. We saw it right there.
We did.
I totally agree with that sentiment that I saw. Like, okay, like, that ain't love. I don't know what you think you're doing. That's basically abuse, but okay. There's a lot of people who do spells like that more than any of us would probably be comfortable knowing.
That's likely true. And actually, I've considered those spells as curses, right? Because the way that they work is you're trying to get someone to do an action, and it's basically cursing them until they do that action. So
this is one place where I totally agree. I've always considered that love spells for a particular person are curses. Now, generally, if you appeal to the gods or you do like whatever magic and you're asking for a new romance, that's a little different, right? That's you're asking for something new to just come about. That's kind of manipulating chance. But when you actually say this person with me, like, why aren't they with you? Like, there's some reason that they're not with you. And so this is a curse. It sort of violates the free will kind of constraint, even though people, they don't see it that way, but it really does break free will. You're saying, like, why isn't the person with you in the first place? Did you not have the courage to talk to them? Do they have another girlfriend or boyfriend or both? Or like, what's going on? Like, did you have constant fights? Why is there not already, why isn't it happening? So like, I totally agree with that. Love is, spells like that are inherently coercive.
Right. And I just want to point out, like, when I say that this sort of magic is a curse, I mean, like, literally, like, a lot of these are, they call on Typhon Set. So they're Typhonian. They're like, you know, give them like sickness and restlessness and like burning and, you know, just like not any of the stuff associated with love that I would think. Now, separately from that, the spell to Helios, the consecration for all purposes that I wrote about, one of the boons of the sun that it does grant is allure, right? So it's like glamour that makes people want to look at you, you know, and that's more of a, you know, like a softer approach to, you know, getting someone to notice you as opposed to the intense coercion of these other spells, which, you know, they call them love spells, and I'm just not calling them that.
No, I'm, yeah, I think we're agreeing with you. Like those,
we're all in agreement. So that's curse work, not love.
Like making yourself look good so people notice the best things about you. Okay, fair game. You know, that's not total coercion. That's just, you're just putting your best foot forward, right? But actually, you know, sending the dead to drag someone kicking and screaming to your bed, it's a little rough.
It is.
I think people need to look up the definition of love in the dictionary if they want to do a spell like that.
Yeah.
So do you have any upcoming events besides working on the new book, which you talked about, the second pamphlet? Do you have any events coming up or things that you would like to talk about or mention?
So I do not have any events coming up. I also took this entire year off of events just so I could write. Last year, I did a conference called Astromagia, which is a conference about magic of the stars, and I was asked to present about the PGM. So one of the questions you had earlier is, how did I pick this particular spell to write about? It was a presentation that I had done first. So I spent months researching this, probably about 9 months of work with the writing and the research, just to get this incredibly slim little volume. So there's still a lot of information in there to boil it down and hopefully make it really accessible to people. You know, sometimes people will say, like, what book do you recommend that can just explain the PGM? And, you know, while there are some books out there, like Skinner's Techniques of Greco-Egyptian Magic, there's really kind of a need for more, right? Especially, it would be especially intimidating to have to pick up this huge hardback book and digest it before picking up the PGM. And the PGM isn't something that most people can just pick up and work from. I once joined an online like PGM study thing. And it was not associated with the PGM study and practice group on Facebook. It was just a group of people that were like, hey, let's do a little like study group together. And, you know, I went for the first session and I don't know what I was expecting, but it was like these people were opening the PGM for the first time and looking at the first spell and they were like, oh, wow. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of the response that you get when you're not really familiar with it and you open it up and you see it and, you know, it's using a lot of different complicated techniques. You know, not all of it could be translated, right? There's a lot of words in the Greek magical papyri that folks just couldn't translate. So they left them alone. So you'll be, you know, reading the spell and then there'll just be a string of unintelligible words that we call barbarous names. Which are the names that the barbarians called the gods, according to Greeks. They're like, if you don't speak Greek, you're a barbarian. So that's, foreign names and epithets for spirits. However, we are, and I say we, I mean like scholars academically, they are getting translated. So that is out there. And a lot of them are Egyptian. And part of the issue with, I think, why the Greek magical papyri was such a mystery for folks for so long is the way academic study was done is it was very segmented. So it's like, okay, I am a Greek scholar. I know ancient Greek and I know Greek stuff, and these are Greek texts. So I'm gonna translate them. However, in the case of the PGM, it's Egyptian magic, right? Like the more I dig into it, the more Egyptian it is. At first I was a little confused, but no, it's very Egyptian. And, you know, so we had people, the Egyptian scholars weren't translating it because it wasn't in Demotic or Coptic or anything. It was in Greek, right? So when the Greek folks got to these names, which are, you know, like phonetically transliterated from the Egyptian, they're like, I don't know what that is. So that's the explanation for why there's so many untranslated words in the PGM.
But nowadays, like, the scholarship is different. people sort of believe in collaboration or synthesis studies, or so it's getting a little easier.
And it's amazing. I know I keep mentioning the PGM study and practice group, but you know, this really is a little a niche subject, and to have so many people from all over the world participating. You know, we've got people that are in Egypt, people that are in Greece, people that are in Italy, you know, a lot of folks in the United States, you know, and everybody's there trying to collaborate.
We will include that link to the show, so that way people can join if they're interested in it. Any last words for the people who are getting into the PGM, maybe as a result of the show?
Not really, no.
No. If people are interested, our public library has a copy of Dieter's PGM. It's got a copy of Skinner's Egyptian Greco Magic, and it will soon have a copy of Allison's Helios Relic that you can come and look at all three and just pull out all three and compare notes. In the public library, our public library, that we have with about 1,000 occult books. So if you're interested in the stuff that you heard, we have it all here. You can kind of check it out. Of course, if you check it out and you like the Helios Rite that you read, we're going to tell you, well, you know, you got to buy it.
Yes, you
That's
do.
That's the whole point.
We'll be watching.
Right. And also just to let people know, this little monograph, it's short. It's under $5, right? The print copy is under $5, and the EPUB is under $2. So it's out there. It's affordable, and hopefully people like it.
Totally. So if you're in Toronto, come check it out. $2? Come on. You can see it before you buy it. It's worth it. And likewise, if you want to look it up in its original PGM, that's right here too. So that said, what events do we have coming up for this store, Zach?
Well,
besides
the closest
rituals all night tonight.
Well, I mean, that is a full event that we're going to be doing tonight for ourselves. However, next week, on the Saturday, November 26th, we have a full listing of free events if you're in Toronto. We start off with Happiness Qigong, then we move on into connecting with your ancestors with our consecrated Altar to the Dead. And then we'll have documentaries. And
you forgot to mention that consecrated Altar to the Dead is publicly accessible. It's outside our store. You can access it anytime the building is open, even if we're not. And you can work with your own ancestors there, and there'll be a QR code and instructions for free that you can come if you have no other place, because we know people in Toronto, housing is short or difficult. You'll be able to come there and just kind of work at the altar. Do what you need to say and do what you have to do, and all the instructors will be there on a QR code that you'll be able to look up some general methods. No charge. You just come and kind of work with it as you need to. So I wanted to add that to why that's cool, Zach.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And then our capstone is we're running a fox ritual to get more luck. So that's
the closest officially say it's a Taoist fox ritual.
I should.
It's a Taoist ritual. It's not any fox. It's a Taoist fox ritual.
It's not any fox coming. It's a Taoist fox ritual. There you go.
Well, I mean, it's a Taoist ritual. You also forgot that we have a documentary.
No, I mentioned that.
Oh, yeah. Well, there we go. We have the publicly available documentaries being shown for the first time. That was created by York University. Students up here is being submitted to various festivals where we recorded a ritual and got everyone's impact on it. They did a great job on the documentary. So if you want to, and it's actually being submitted to Netflix. So we're going to see what happens, but it was filmed here. We're sort of proud about that. So if you're in Toronto, there's a lot of cool stuff. Now we can't show the documentary yet on the internet, so that'll only be in person, but we'll talk about the documentary next week on the show. We have to get rights to show the documentary online, which we're working on.
We're working on that. And then, I mean, we have our sponsor workshops. So we're working through the tarot on that, and we're working on the different suits. So the next one is actually tomorrow, and that's going to be swords. And then we're going to keep working through it.
All right. As we say always, everyone have a great night. stay safe. I mean, at least in Toronto, the COVID numbers are back up. Stay healthy as well. And thanks, Allison, for coming on the show. We hope when you get the second ritual pamphlet done to have you come back on and talk about it and like see equally what happened with people who try it out with the second pamphlet that you're about to write.
Thanks so much for having me.
Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole is sponsored by the Queen City Curio and Apothecary in Toronto, Ontario. Proudly in East Chinatown. Our store is at 607 Girard Street East, Unit 401. Just take the elevator up to the fourth floor and we're right there. We carry the finest spiritual goods for all spiritual paths. Whatever you are into, we can help. Check out our full public library of occult materials with over 1,000 books. Accessible anytime the store is open. Check us out online at queencitycurio.ca. Be sure to leave a wish at our wish shrine right outside our door. You never know, it may just come to pass.